The second scripture reading this morning is from Mark 4, verses 45, 35 through 41. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. And other boats were with him. A great gale arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Well, he woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?"
Getting to be lay liturgist is kind of a neat thing when you get to introduce two very, very special women that Judy alluded to. Dina Haki is a refugee from Iraq. She came to the United States with her family in November in 2007. In her home country, Ms. Haki worked as an interpreter and a teacher, but due to the war condition and threats to her immediate family members, the whole family had to leave the country. Now, Mrs. Haki works for Omaha Public Schools as a paraprofessional for English as a second language program, where every day she supports the language learners who have also experienced the life of a refugee. Mrs. Haki also volunteers with the Lutheran Family Services, assisting with refugee resettlement needs. For her continuous efforts, hard work, and dedication, she received the Volunteer of the Year Award from the LFS in 2008. Glenora Isevia is one that we have met before, and I'm sure many of you will remember. She came from Uzbekistan, a former Soviet state in Central Asia, to the United States as an international student to obtain a master's degree in the field of education. Later, her family joined Glenora as the political and economic situation in the native country deteriorated. Currently, Glenora teaches English as a second language to the English language learners at Northwest High School at Omaha Public Schools. Most of her students are refugees who have arrived to the U.S. with high hopes to rebuild their shattered lives anew from different countries around the world. Will you please join me in welcoming these two young ladies?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting us. I hope we'll be able to speak loud enough. I don't usually hold a microphone, so it's a little overwhelming. Well, first of all, we would like to thank everyone, the congregation, especially the organizing committee for inviting us to your Sunday service and to taking to giving some time to talk about this issue. And we just feel that I guess this is one of the reasons why people around the world in the most troubling times look at the United States as a last resort to go, because people, completely strangers, are very accepting of the troubles and challenges that other people have, and they are very welcoming. Just like probably 5 years ago when I came, I met Joanne Van Fossen at the airport, and she didn't know me and I didn't know her, and she's like my family in the United States. And without people like Joanne and her family, it would have been very hard to survive. And especially emotional support is very important for the refugees and immigrants, just like many generations before the people, the immigrants who came here. That's exactly how they felt, probably. Well, today we wanted to talk about refugees who we serve at our school, and then we have Ms. Dina Haki, who we are very pleased to have at our school, as a prepared professional who will share her story of how she became a refugee and some of the challenges and success stories that she has had. The refugee, first of all, we wanted to kind of clarify the definition. We apologize for a small font. I didn't realize that the screen would be smaller and the area is bigger. But a main thing is a refugee is a person who has to leave the native country due to a political, economic, or religious persecution. And that makes the huge difference between the refugee and immigrant. And immigrants on the other side, they can plan and make certain preparations, and they actually set a goal to immigrate to a certain country. And with a refugee, it's like, you know, you don't really have a choice. You have to get up and get going because of the safety and other issues. Refugees around the world, and there are a lot of refugees, unfortunately, all around the world due to the ongoing wars or economic, political problems. And these statistics we borrowed from some websites and the Lutheran Family Services brochure. So according to the World Refugee Survey in 2001, 14.5 million people are refugees and asylum seekers, meaning that they're looking, they're trying to get the refugee status. Nearly two-thirds of the world's refugees are either from the Near East or African countries. And large refugee populations today include Kurds, Burundians, Afghans, and Sudanese. And women and children usually make up 80% of the world's refugee population. Usually people ask, like, where are the men? Because the men are not around anymore, like, probably they either died in the war or something bad happened, the families were destroyed. Now the women, the mothers and wives and children are seeking refugee status, some safety. Refugees in the United States, and each year, U.S. President, in consultation with Congress, determines the number of refugees to be admitted to the United States. So the current total is approximately 85,000 people, and that is less than 1% of the refugees worldwide. I think the United States probably is a large, like the United States accepts the most number of the refugees, and some European countries, and Ms. Haki probably will tell you some of your relatives live in Australia and New Zealand. So it usually developed countries will be more, or yeah.
Sweden,
European countries, yeah, they will be more readily ready to accept and help provide the refugees. Well, refugees in Nebraska, and that's a very sweet picture of Ms. Haki's family. And you, do you want to tell about the picture?
So I'll start now. I'll start with Assalamu Alaikum. That means welcome and hi in my language. I'm Dina Haki, which is Iraqi refugee, and I'm from Iraq. I work as an interpreter and as an assistant principal in my country. And the principal was really my mother-in-law, because this school was a private school. It's our school. It was really a family business. It was for my mother-in-law, as I said, and I was working as an assistant principal and then as a teacher. Really, I never imagined for a minute or moment that I would be a refugee, but God wants. And I'm now as a refugee. I came here for in that country as a refugee. And I'm lucky that I'm here in that country, and I'm a refugee here. Refugee is, as Ms. Asayevesh said, it's not really as a migrant. Something that you didn't decide to be a refugee. You go to place that you didn't decide to go with. You didn't choose the place. All of a sudden, you go to a place that you didn't choose, you didn't decide, and it's not really easy choice, not easy decision, but you forced to do so. So I will tell a brief story about my about what happened to me. As I said, I was I was interpreter and as a teacher. I worked as a teacher and housewife also, and in Iraq. And then my husband was one of the famous industrial men in Iraq. And I have three kids, which is, at that time they were 16, 13, and 4 years old at that age. And we were very happy till, you know, the war happened. And till the war broke, happened, and the war broke out. And we were, you know, as you know, everyone, we were very happy that when America came, the United States came, and we to get rid of the Saddam regime. But things get very deteriorated. And at the first 3 months, 3 months, everything was very good, especially all the things was very good. Everything was in order, especially when we have the Bremer and when we had the General Bremer, and the, everything was in order. But things get, because the borders were opened, and all the borders were open, so anyone could come in. So like Al-Qaeda and most of the Iranian, which we have, you know, the neighbors, Iran, most of the Iranian came, things began to be deteriorated. So this is our problem, began to be very no security. Most of the things began to be very worse. So, we began to be receive very threats. We began to be receive many threats. Like we've heard some bombs. We've heard at the beginning of the war. I didn't mention that because we have a bomb in our house. I didn't mention that because that's something easy, you know. We could survive that because thanks God we survived, because you know the first bomb, it's hit our house. It's really not bomb. It's a three settlers. One of them, because of the war, we have the containers to put the water for the, because now we have no electricity because of the war. We have nothing for we should serve water, safe water. So because my husband have a factory. I told you that he's one of the famous industrial men. He has a factory for detergent. So he brought one of the containers to save water in that container, so that all the time we have water. You know, we can't survive without water. So he put the water in that container. So one of the shelters. Container that survived our life, you know, and one in the garden and one in the other roof. So that what happened that container of water really stopped the fire. But everything was damaged, but we can survive. So I didn't mention that. Yes, it's a big bomb, and it's. But we didn't. It didn't make us escape from the country. So the only thing it happened, we moved from that house to another house, and we fixed our that house, the windows, the walls, and everything. That until we could manage to go to other. House, we've reunited, and then we could go back again. But this is not the problem. The problem is when things began the safety for our life, when someone knocked the door and take the man from the house, and they kill them when you never know why. This is threat for our house, not the woman. It's okay for them. But that's when someone knock the door and get the man and kill them, you never know why. This is the problem. The civil war starts, this is a problem. When the bomb hit the house, no, this is not a problem. So when the civil war started, this is a problem. So in 2003, this is a problem, which is really 2006. I mean, this is when things get very deteriorated, and we began to receive very severe, or many threats, let me start again. 2003, we have a bomb again. 2006, we have a bomb in March 2006. We have a bomb in the school of my kids, two kids. It's okay. I told them, let's finish the year. Let's finish the year because it's the end of the year. Let's finish it. And then. My husband began to receive more and more threats. And I told them, okay. And he didn't ignore the threat because he wanted to stay in the country. You know, it's not easy to move. And I told them, he kept telling me, okay, but we should stay here. And I told him, no, things began, you know, the civil war started, especially between Sunni and Shia in Iraq. And I keep saying, not Shia, Iraq. Shia related to Iran, which is militia also related to Iran. I don't know whether you heard of that militia, Muqtada al-Sadr, which is belongs 100% to Iran, next door to us, neighbors to our borders to Iran. And then he keep received the threat, but he ignored that. And then at the same month, I received phone call from my daughter, from friend of me, and she said that your daughter is in our house, and a bomb was in the school, but she managed to climb the wall and she escaped. So your daughter in our house. Imagine what I feel. I have no car, because yes, I have a car in the garage, but I can't run the car because there is no gas. Imagine a country with full of oil, but no gas in the car. You know. Look what happened to that country, you know. But then, okay, I imagine to have a driver who can take me with a taxi, with a gas, but all the streets are blocked. This is one of the worst things, because 2006, we got a new regime after we have elections, but it was a bad election. This is the problem. A bad elections, because the elections wasn't a true elections. Yes, they gave us elections, but no good elections, because you know we have three kinds of people. This is the most. This is why we were happy, because we get rid of Saddam. Saddam, yes, they gave education. He gave education, but the problem still we were having three kinds. We have the poverty. Poor people, and we have the elements, but still we have the ignorant people. Those people, when we were to have the election, they could tell those people that they will come a people who have no religion. They will lead you no religion. They will lead you to only education, or what you know, I took it from Ms. Saiva, atheist. Yes, so we'll lead you to that. Don't give them the way to lead you. That's why they give all their votes to these people who block-minded people, and that lead us to here. When they lead us to this point, you could not even talk with them. which I've told you, they belong 100% to Iran. All their loyalty to Iran, they don't belong to us. So you can't talk with them. That's why they raise all the conflict between Sunni and Shia. Before, we don't have that problem. So their own thing is just to protect everything is correct. Even they reach, you know, when we play the game of soccer, they attack that play game. They attack everything is good. Every progress. They attack everything. They attack the industrial, they attack the game, they attack the education, they attack everything. Under the name of religion. Everything is angled. What do you call it? Angled under the name of religion. It's not lawful to do that under the name of religion. That's why we couldn't do anything. So we reached the point that we should escape. After I reached my daughter, and then I told, even though I told them we should continue. At the next day, my daughter should continue and go back to school because she should finish the year and she attended it. Very important in our country because, you know, there is no excuse to not go to school, and there is no excuse. You know why they throw the bomb? Because it's a ladies or a girls' school. Girls should not attend school. That's one of the things. Under the religion. That's the problem. So that's what I'm telling you. Saddam's regime is very bad, but he has no black-minded values. He's not good. He's very big lie. Because of his job, the big lie of that I have a nuclear, I have the big lie, the big job, I have a nuclear. He led us to that war. Yes. We have that law, that war, but he didn't have that problem. He didn't have that block mind. Yes. Okay, after that day, I told him, yes, you should go back to school because attendance is a very good thing in our country. You should have 100% attendance because you have no excuse. So, okay, go with all the. I told her go back, but in my heart, I'm crying because I don't know whether she will have a bomb in the street in her way, whether she will have a kidnapping, or, you know, we have all the problems of kidnapping, of raping, or everything in that day. Because we have no security. We have all the problems in the internal ministry. We have all the problems. We have no government. This is the problem. Then later, her uncle, I mean this my brother-in-law, they kidnapped. You never know what gang. What gang? Who's the gang related to whom? You don't know. To whom? To which militia? You don't know. My husband had to pay the ransom. He went with his car and he paid the ransom. This is a bad point for him. No, because they recognized him, and he went with his car with the factory, the name, the title of the factory, and which is a bad point. This is also one of the bad things. And then later, I was very fed up. I told him, okay, this is the end of the year. I'm going to have a race. And I took the opportunity that my family came from New Zealand, because my family are in New Zealand, and they came to Jordan to see us. I told him, okay, I'm going to Jordan to see my family and have a break. He says, okay, go. So I didn't take anything because my plan is to go to Jordan and see my family. That's it. So I'm not planning to escape from the country or anything. That's why I'm telling you, refugee is not a plan or anything. My plan is to go and visit my family. So I just took 3 weeks or 2 weeks close. That's it. to Jordan, and he will come back to his father. That's his plan. And so I left the country 8 June 2006. And yes, he take us to Jordan, and I went and I saw my family, and he came back. When he came back, after 2 weeks, a false check point captures his manager. His manager, which his name is Amr, thinking that he is Imam, because all his manager, all his factory, wearing the same. Yes.
Sorry, we can't hear you with the mic down there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I've got a question. Did your husband, is he still in Iraq, or is he?
No. I'm sorry. No. He's here. No.
He is here.
Yes.
Okay.
And then after 2 weeks, they captured his manager, because he's wearing the same uniform, and the same because they were working the same uniform, and he's driving the car and the car was it has the same title of the factory and all the papers under the name of Imad. So they thought that he is Imad, not the name Amr. But Amr was very smart guy. And by the way, Amr is a Shi'i, not Sunni. But he's very smart guy. By a slang language, by mentioning some some names or some famous names, he could release his himself by mentioning, I think, some famous names from from the gang names or something like that. So he could mention the names that go and he refers some names. Go and ask these names. I am not Imad. I am that man. Go and ask these names. So, and he used some slang language that I am here. I'm that man. So they release him. But they've told him, we want that man, and we were going to kill him. So after they released him, he immediately called Imad, and he told him that they are going to kill you. So please just run away, and they are going to kill you. So he couldn't go back, and he couldn't escape from the country immediately, because you know, at that time there is something that if he could just go by any driver, if he's not faithful man, he could just sell him to another gang and take money of that. So it's not easy to drive with anyone. So he just hide in his sister's apartment for 2 days till he could take his till he reached his faithful driver that he trusts, and he took him to Jordan. So he joined us later, and that's why joined us. So he escaped from the country. So that's why we escaped, and that way we escaped from the country. So we didn't arrange, either me or him, we escaped from the country. So, and that way we became a refugee. So my plan was 3 weeks, and for him, just on ordinary day to go to work. And so he end up hiding in his sister apartment, and then to escape to Jordan. And that's it. So that's why I'm telling you, refugee is not easy, just like that. So, and then we decided to stay in Jordan. But staying in Jordan is not easy, because they will not give us the residency unless we should keep in the bank not less than 100,000 more than 100,000 in the bank without dealing with it anything, just like that. And there is no public schools, and it's very expensive. So we decide to move to Syria, which is cheaper. In Syria, it's okay. They give us a residency because we put our kids in public schools. But when they give us a residency, because we put kids in public school, they give us a paper to sign that we should not work anything, either me or my husband, which is a problem. From where we will take, from where we will get our money. Because, you know, when we leave the country, my husband is, yes, we have money in our country, but, you know, because he's working in the, what you call it, in the market, in the, you know, as a tradesman or what you call it, all his money in the market, so nothing he has in the bank or in his pocket, what you call it, nothing he has. So that's it. So from where we got money? Only what we could manage for 2 months, 3 months, maybe 1 year, yes. At that time, he received a chat. He was chatting with his friend, Prof. Hani Haider. He's working here at UNMC, which that man I appreciate very much. Well, this man is also Shia, but he's Shia from Iraq, and he's very open-minded man. He told him, okay, Himad, could you come and visit me? This man, he knows very much that his friend is very independent man, and he could not come and tell him that, can you help me? So that's why he told him, just visit me, and you know that, remember last time you said that you want to come and you want to change your machines for your factory and these things, so come. And as soon as he received Imad the visit, the invitation, they accept here the embassy, the visit, the invitation, and he came. When he came, only a month later, he came here the 14 December, 14 December, 14 December 2006, 2006. Just a month later, his factory, which that man was dealing with it, the manager received an envelope with two bullets. Inside the two bullets, at that time I was in Syria. I remained with the kids in Syria. The envelope has two bullets. The two bullets at that time means that we are going to kill you, not the manager, but we are going to kill Imad, because we know that if you don't close the factory, and we know your trick, that the manager is dealing running the factory, and we know that because he's Shia and because the place is for Shia. You know, because at that time Iraq began to be places divided by places, Sunni and Shia. This place is for Sunni and this place for Shia, so everyone should be Sunni for like that. So, and we know that your wife is here, she's in Syria, and everyone. So they give some details, you know. So we don't know what to do, because, you know, Imad, he discussed that with his friend Hani, and Hani told him, okay, that means that's it. They know everything about you. So what are you going to do? Could you apply for asylum? It's better for you, because you are here. It's not, you know, easy decision, so it's better to apply for decision. He phoned me and he says, what about you, Dina? I've told him, what can I say? You know, that if you say yes, that means he will not come back again, and I'll be in Syria alone, And if I say no, that means he will come back, and come back, that means he can't work anything in Syria. And it's not easy, so it's not really, it's not something easy. I can't decide on him, on his behalf, so it's not easy. So it was very difficult. So all that, and when I see the children, it's not easy for them. Well, everything is difficult. Even himself, he can't decide on his behalf. And we are running off money. This is the problem. We are running off money. You never know how much it will take that. Also, with no money, we are opening two houses, one in America, one in Syria, and we can't work. And now the manager, he can't even send us money because no money. You know, now we are also need to close the factory in Iraq. So everything, you know, is getting worse and worse, and we don't know where we are going. This is the problem. We don't know where we are going. And I was talking with Judy also. The main thing is we're receiving calls like his mom, she's telling me, don't tell him to come back, because that means they are going to kill him. And also I'm receiving a call from mom, don't tell him to stay because you will be alone. So, as you know, everything is very difficult. So it's not really easy. But then I told him, okay, no, you should stay because it's worth it. This is your, you know, we have children and we need to do something for them. You know, it's not easy. You know, we have no future in Syria. It's not easy. We have to do something for them. You know, I keep telling them we need to buy something. We need to buy a home for these kids. It's not easy. When I'm saying home, that means we need to buy a future for them. You know, something to be safe. We need to have something to stay safe. Yes, I am. When I was in Syria, they give me a residency for them, but it's not safe because you have no future. No, when you don't work and you have no money, so there is no safety place. No, anytime they will kick you outside. No safety. So it was not really easy. Later on, so when he decided to apply for asylum, I told him, okay, I will enroll with UN. So I enrolled with the UN program. They consider me as a woman in danger because a woman with three kids. So they told me, okay, we will send you to your husband. So my case approved before my husband, his case approved. Yeah, it's one of the things that, you know, you can't believe it. So when I came here, my case approved before my husband approved. So I reunioned with him. I filed the application, which is I-730 at the Lutheran Family Services, and I applied for him I-73 to reunion with him with me, and they approve it now. So he's a refugee now with me. Thanks God. This is the thing that I really I'm happy now with it. And then we began here, when we came here, which is, I can't tell you how much, at the first day in the airport, that's 1 year when we separated, really. So this is after 1 year, the first day in the airport when we've met. How much I describe it for you when we met together, you can't believe it, really. It's all of a sudden when they told us that you are going to go with him, so to him, you know. My son, little son, how much I tell you that all the time in the airplane, he keep telling me, really, we are going to see that? You know, I can't really explain how much he was very happy. Even I think the picture will tell you, you know, it explained everything, you know. Even Imad, my husband, he was so happy. You know, whatever you have, whatever you feel, it can explain that. That's the happiness that me and Imad will have it, you know. How much we have, how much we sacrifice, can't tell. Now, I think by that we achieve the goal. Yeah, we achieved that goal. So later on, you know, later on when we came here, when we reunion together, we decide now we are going to start again. Yes, we were stable in Iraq. We did everything. Yes, we were in Iraq. We had very stable life before war. I have my school. He have his factory. We were very stable. But now we should start again from the beginning with a stable life again. And we achieve it by all the support. I can forget all the support. I have a great support from the government. Yes, from the government first when they approved my case. And they brought me here. And the support, because I have no money at the beginning when I came. So without the food stamp and without the cash assistance, I can't have that push, to stand. And the Lutheran Family Services, when they stand with me, now I can speak English. You know, at the beginning, if you've heard, now I'm speaking a little bit fluency. At the beginning of the speech, I couldn't speak. Every time when I came at the Lutheran, I couldn't speak any word. They started with me, like ABC. ABC. When I worked with them, they started with me, ABC. They showed me the system. They showed me all the way. So they started with me. Even they showed me how... They told me that they explained to me what the meaning that of how they explained to me that yes, we like you, I feel that by the smile from all the people in the office. How do they like me from the beginning, the smile of the hello for all the people in the morning? Because yes, I know that they say hello in the morning, but you can't feel that they like you or not. But from this morning, the month, you can feel that they like you. When I come back at home, I tell Imad, yes, they approved our case and they accepted. But you never know that the people in U.S. they like us or no, because they're soldiers in our country. But by the Lutheran, with working with the Lutheran, yes, I told them they like us. They like us, so they helped me a lot. Also, I can't ignore the help or support of Omaha Public School. How much they help, and they start with my daughters at Central High School. They were like angels, the teachers, the counselors. Now my daughter, the oldest one, she graduated and she got the scholarship of Suzanne Buffett. Which with that she achieved her goal. She at in our country she says I would go to medical school and then I will take my PhD from America. But God chose for her the best. She will start from here, from U.S. from the beginning, and by Suzanne Buffett scholarship she will start from the beginning, which is a great goal.
Well, Ms. Haki's story is a long story of the struggle and how all of a sudden a strong and stable family had to separate and change their life completely to put their safety and security of their children and their own first and come to the United States. Well, as she said, that through all the struggles, but they did see some success. Their kids are on their way to graduate from school or going on to college. But this is one of the stories, and each individual story of the refugee is very different, whether they are well-educated or rich or poor or uneducated. And when they arrive to this country, they arrive with one goal, to start again, or they are forced to start again. And especially for adults, it's even more painful than children. Because in their heart, they will always have two countries, like two countries that they will belong to. But basically, we just wanted to kind of explain what the journey that the refugee takes or the person takes and what the reasons why they become a refugee. And we wanted to actually thank you for opening your doors and trying to understand the causes so you can open your hearts even bigger, which you already probably help a lot in their community with for to immigrants or refugees who you know through the library programs, language programs, or any type of assistance. What the refugees really need is probably just a friend in the community who can like smile at them because they don't really speak any language at the beginning, and who can, like Ms. Haki said, who can show them that they are welcomed and they can start again, that the life is not over yet. So with that, we'll open, if you have any questions, I know we took some time at this point.
I just wondered how your children are adjusting.
Yeah, as I said, you know, at the beginning it was very difficult for them, but Omaha Public School did a great job, as I said, especially as central. The counselors was especially the counselor was Mr. Moore, and he did a great job. He was crying as she was crying, both of them was crying. He was crying with them, and he did a great job with them. Both of them, they didn't need ESL, but he did a great job with them. He did a great schedule for them, and then they also at the beginning, you know, they struggled, but then they did well, and they and I've told you, she is now. This is her picture. I couldn't put it here. She graduated now, and she got the scholarship of Suzanne Buffett, and then she did her orientation at UNO, and she will have the medical the pre-dentistry program, and that's it. For the other one, she will she's junior now at Central. And I have my 9 years old. He's at Floralton. And you can never, he has no accent now. He's great. But at the beginning, as I said, still we have some cultural thing, which I have no problem because I have volunteered at Lutheran Family Services. He has some problem, like all the time we have when we say, hey, we have the touch. He has 3 warnings in the school because of this. He touches the boys, you know, and girls when he say, hey. You know, we have, when we say, hey, we touch the boys, his friends. He has 3 warnings. He had that problem at the beginning.
Well, yeah. To add to this, at our school, we serve a very diverse population. And last year, we accepted a lot of students from Burma, which is, I think, it's near Thailand, and that Myanmar, it's also known as that Myanmar. But students who arrived there from there, the current population, very nice and friendly students, very low English they came. But we specifically know one of our students, her name is Papa Win, and she knew one word in English, that she wanted to become a lawyer and try to bring justice to her country. And with that kind of goal-oriented people, and I always say that she'll be a great contributor, like great citizen for this country, because, you know, she's got the goals and she just has that in her heart. She has seen her parents being killed in front of her. She's an orphan now, but, you know, the challenges are kind of driving force for her to be better and work and take things back and work for her community and community here in the United States. And they are usually always very appreciative with very little that they have, and they just try to kind of go forward. And a lot of our students, refugees, they just they are very wonderful individuals with great stories.
Well, yes, we have here many stores that have the Middle East things, yes. Like in 72nd one, in 84 one, and 84 in center, yes. And sometimes when I go to Lincoln. Oh. I have a problem. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes, the refugee.
Yes, like me, for me, yes, there is well, when I were in Syria, yes, there is a program which is IOM. I enrolled in UN, United Nations, which is Ankara then, and then they. I enrolled for UN just for protection. They will not kick me from Syria to Iraq, back to Iraq, but because I am women in danger. They changed me to another program, which is IOM, International Organization Migration. That's why they changed me to refugee here. Otherwise, the UNCAR program, that was only protection, not to send me back to Iraq, just to settle me in Syria. But that changed me to another program, which is IOM, that's changed me to refugee and come here.
And also, Lutheran Family Service, I think that's a resettlement, and they kind of get the families up and going with the House and Human Service Department, Immigration Services. They provide the lawyers, or if there are some legal issues, they get them hooked up with the food stamps and school districts for children and adults. Even I think there is an employment assistance or English language learning classes that are offered through community colleges.
It has caseworker for all the refugees like me, for Arabic and Somali, for Somalian Arabic, for Burma and everyone.
But I think the great help comes from the communities like Ralston and the other smaller communities, because for my own family, although we knew why we were coming as students on a student visa, it's still great to have a friendly buddy family, to know in that community that you can always turn to, not necessarily for financial assistance, but just for some moral support to kind of recreate that homey feeling that you had to leave behind. And that's really, that's a huge thing that, I have lived in some other parts of the United States, but that's what I've experienced in the Midwest. And I guess that made us kind of continue on staying, and it's just a wonderful feeling to know that support in your back. With that, we really very much thank you for all the time that you gave us, and I'm sure your community will grow as more immigrants and refugees are arriving, resettling in the communities. So hopefully this information will be helpful a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you very much.